You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, and the Fantasy Viper, Graham Barfield. I don't even know how to introduce the show today. I saw Joker over the weekend.
Was it good?
Yeah, so did I.
You know what? I would say it is worth it. Look, the story is sort of predictable or whatever, but it is worth it to watch Joaquin Phoenix do his thing for 2 hours.
Man, he was phenomenal.
Watching him do that for 2 hours was amazing. I had questions at the end. There were parts of it that, I wasn't quite on board with. But whatever, like I said, if you want to just watch an actor, like, at the top of his game do his thing, like, it is worth it to watch Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, his mannerisms, like, just the way he carried himself throughout the film, what they asked him to do throughout the film,
yeah.
I mean, it's a very difficult job, and he definitely took it his own way and made his own made his own path with Joker.
Plus, Zazie Beetz is one of my celebrity crushes, so watching her was pretty good.
Is he now your Joker, or is it still Heath Ledger?
I don't know. I mean,
I think it was
Jack Nicholson. Still, are we tossing?
Oh,
Jack
okay,
Nicholson
no. Side? Whoever, yeah. I mean, yeah.
I think it was just so different from all the other iterations of Jokers. I think that's what made it so. Mm-hmm. I think kind of like its own standalone lane. I think you should definitely check it out.
I will. I couldn't do it this weekend because we had Matthew, so I went and saw Adam's Family.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right,
which is good.
I still want to see that too.
The one thing I will say about Joker, and this is not a spoiler. In every iteration of the Batman origin story and the Joker origin story, the one thing that no writer or filmmaker has plausibly explained to me is why a billionaire is dragging his wife and young son through a dark alley in the middle of Gotham City at night. Like, how? How is this happening? You don't have a driver just waiting outside the theater for you to, like, get in the car and drive. I don't understand it.
Yep.
It's a fair point.
I mean, in the Batman Begins movie, it was because the play that they were watching scared Bruce, so they went out a
back way
back
or whatever
door. But to your point,
like,
right,
you know, I don't know, get your driver ready. We know you have one. Right. You're a billionaire. Okay. Anyway, we have plenty to talk about on this show today. We will wrap up week 6. I, for some odd reason, don't ask me why, was in a Queen sort of mood, so it has maybe a Bohemian Rhapsody kind of feel to it. Well, you know, whatever. Just roll with it. It's fine. We'll talk some waiver wire stuff as well, but before we do all of that, go behind the glass and talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's up?
I heard you guys talking a little bit before about Juju, and you can make fun of me for this one. I made a trade in my main league, and I moved Mike Evans and O.J. Howard because I was just sick of the Bucks offense.
You got somebody to take O.J. Howard?
If you don't,
you're brilliant.
I don't have Godwin, and I was just sick of, like, which week is this going to be for Evans? Is he going to get 40 points? Is he going to get 0 points? So a guy in the bottom of the league had Juju, and he had Chris Herndon, who I thought was going to come back from injury. So I was like, oh, that's a perfect, you know, 2 for 2. Mm. And obviously, Juju had that game last night, and I think Evans had, like, 9 for 96 or something like that. He had a pretty good game. Am I that? You guys can tell me. Am I that dumb for making a move like that?
I know. It makes it interesting. Like, my reaction to that is always, as long as your thought process is sound, as long as you have a logical reason for doing it, then, you know, that's fine. Like, you never really know, you know, when they kick the game off, how things are going to go. So I understand the logic. It totally makes sense. You just got burned.
Yeah.
Is Juju, like, is this what's going on? Is it because of no Big Ben, or is it no Antonio Brown?
No, I mean, dude, like,
yes.
You're going from, and remember, I mean, his last few games, he wasn't putting up huge numbers, but he was giving you, what, 13 plus. it's a third string quarterback who's just dumping the ball off to his running back. I mean,
Devlin Hodges,
he doesn't have a lot of confidence, and the offensive coordinator there is not going to put him in a position where he's throwing the ball deep or forcing him into coverage.
Well, it's in my head now that he, like, I think he is a true one, but I'm like, is he suffering because he doesn't have AB taking away defenders, or is it because he doesn't have Ben who's throwing the ball over the field? Like, I don't know which it really is.
Right. Last night specifically, I mean, Devlin Hodges only had to throw it like 20 times.
Yeah.
You know?
What the hell happened to the Chargers?
Oh,
man. I mean, I was all over their defense, and
I streamed their defense.
Awful.
Yeah, same here. But you guys must have not watched much Chargers football recently.
Oh no!
No, I'm just joking.
But I mean,
oh,
like,
man,
home game.
All of their games.
Well, it was a home game, but there was a lot of Steelers fans there. Dave Damashek had posted something on Twitter, and it was like, "This is
it was a Steelers
in Los Angeles." But I mean, it's a third string quarterback on your home field.
All of the Chargers games just find different ways to be miserable,
man.
They do.
It our you know, friend of the program and generally fun guy, Pat Doherty, Roto Pat on Twitter. You may know him. He had a tweet last night that says, "How is every Chargers game the exact same?" And Keenan Allen quote tweeted it and said, "I'm paraphrasing here. Stuff." He didn't say stuff. Stuff sad. Like, so even the Chargers players,
you know who's sad? Anybody who's had Keenan Allen the last 3 weeks.
Oh, we'll get to that.
He went from target monster to where the hell are you?
We will get to that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, plenty to talk about. We'll talk some juju as well. But in the meantime, let's do some news. We will start with the Rams. Todd Gurley, who missed Sunday's game against the 49ers with a quad injury, reportedly has a chance to return this week. I mean, obviously, that's good, right, Fabs? I mean, we want Gurley back on the field. And obviously, like, not just for Gurley's sake, but look, I'm not wading too much into this running backs don't matter thing, but it's undeniable that the Rams are a better, more complete offense when he is on the field. So Gurley coming back, it helps Jared Goff. It helps Robert Woods. It helps all these guys when he's back on the field.
And, I mean, part of it yesterday was the Niners defense, folks, is for real.
It's great.
That defense is nasty good. Marcus Grant is holding back the enthusiasm.
I really am.
Because
like,
I could see it beyond the start.
I don't want to get burned.
He wants to start yelling and screaming and bringing back the days of Joe Montana and Steve Young, all the glory days, and Dwight Clark and those tremendous 49ers defenses. But if you're a 49ers fan, unlike Cowboys fans, you've got a lot to be optimistic about right now. And so that was part of the reason why that offense didn't get off yesterday at all. I think another reason is Jared Goff. I don't know who the quarterback of the Rams is right now, but it's not the same dude who we saw last season. It's just not. Robert Woods didn't score fewer than, what was it? I mean, he basically had double-digit points in almost every game last season. He had nothing yesterday.
Well,
even Cooper Kupp was held in check.
The 49ers, just hats off to them.
Their defense is just awesome.
Phenomenal job wrecking the Rams passing game yesterday. I mean, Jared Goff threw for 78
yards.
He bottomed out hard yesterday. And I think this is what we're starting to see. Look, like Gurley coming back, sure. I thought Darrell Henderson and Malcolm Brown did phenomenal job yesterday in their running game. I thought both of them looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. Goff right now, to me, that's the biggest problem in this offense. He is so limited on his when the play breaks down or there's nothing there, Goff rarely makes plays on his own. He does not extend plays. And when he's asked to get outside of structure right now, he's just brutal. Now we've seen it. You know, this is the MO. This is how to beat the Rams right now.
Yeah, and look at his numbers this year.
Is confusing Goff at the line of scrimmage and taking away his first reads and making him make plays outside of structure. He can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, we're six games in. Goff has had 18 or more points twice. One of those games he rushed for a touchdown, which is out of the ordinary. And then the other game he threw the ball 68 times. The good news is he's got the Falcons this week.
Right? That's a get-right
game. But
hopefully.
From 2018, and hey, I can start Goff with at least some level of confidence, and I can start Robert Woods every week, to 2019, both of those players now, even Brandon Cooks, matchup-based starters.
I mean, that's sort of where we are. By the way, one side note on this, the first rushing touchdown of the season scored against the 49ers, was by Robert Woods.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yes.
Weird, but okay.
Things we thought we would know.
I thought we would never see. So, yeah, so I guess there was that part of it. But, yeah, as Fabs mentioned, the next game against the Falcons on the road in Atlanta next week. So, you know, we'll see what happens with this offense, you know, especially if Gurley's back.
Yeah. You know, it's a weird day when Tyler Higbee is the Rams' leading receiver.
Yeah.
I mean, they just could not do anything vertically in this passing game at all. And it's because Goff just, I mean.
Well, and you talked about the 78 yards there, right? Yeah. But he had, I think he had, for the last couple of drives, I think going about to about five, 6 minutes into the fourth quarter, left in the fourth quarter, I should say, he was at 30. So, yeah. Like, more than half of those yards came with the Rams sort of in desperation.
Listen, Goff is not the same. He's just shook right now. I mean, yeah. There was a play where Gerald Everett, at the end of the season, at the end of that game, it was still 20-7, and Everett was streaking wide open down the sideline. He just straight up missed him.
Just missed him.
Also, keep in mind that the Niners defense has got Washington next week. So it's not the Patriots defense, but this Niners defense is impressive. And if you're looking for a defense and they're on the waiver wire somehow, and they might be, I mean, in some non-competitive leagues, they might be, go out and grab them this week against Case Keenum and that Redskins
offense. I would say do it just because I took a early look, and there aren't a lot of great streaming defense options.
Bills.
A lot of the best matchups are with defenses that are pretty much
Niners
owned.
The Niners are owned in 62% of leagues on NFL.com, so they're out there.
It's like the second or third week in a row we have not had any good streamers.
Yeah. It's
Panthers D hit hard. Titans defense.
Oh, Panthers. Yeah. Panthers were a big hit.
Yeah.
Boy, Jameis. The Seahawks went back to bad Jameis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Other news, Amari Cooper left the game on Sunday against the Jets in the first quarter. He just had one catch for 3 yards in that game. He has a thigh bruise. Early indications, well, actually, there's no real early indications of how long it's going to be. The Cowboys believe it's not really serious, so they don't expect him to miss any extended time. But he could miss some time, I guess, is the point there. And Fabs, it comes at it. They're playing the Eagles next week.
I know.
After what Stephon Diggs did to him, I mean, this seemed like an easy start for Amari Cooper, and he might not be there this week.
Just trying to depress me? You know? I mean, it's bad enough that the Cowboys just lost to the Jets. I might get a different team with Sam Darnold, but I mean, it's the Jets. I mean, that was depressing. So Michael Gallup becomes a must-start if Cooper is out next week, although Gallup has sort of gotten to that point now. And Tavon Austin, anybody? Off the waiver wire? Four teams on a bye? No. Deeper league?
Cowboys didn't
no?
have.
No?
Yeah, they didn't have.
Played 92% of the offensive snaps yesterday?
Yeah, they didn't have Randall Cobb. But,
yep.
Yeah.
Bro, that's what I'm. Yeah, I mean, if Cobb is out again.
Yeah.
Tavon Austin, I'm just throwing it out there, you know, if you're in a deep league. But yeah. And you know, more disappointing, too, is Dak.
Right now, this offense is just in shambles. I mean, Lyle Collins is out.
Yep.
You know, Tyron Smith is out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We've seen them have massive splits without Tyron Smith. And now Dak is down his favorite target. Hopefully, Cooper gets back this week.
Yeah, I mean, he still had 18 points, but it didn't have a touchdown pass, you know, rush for a touchdown, thankfully, for fantasy owners who actually started him. But, I mean, keep tabs on the status of Cooper this week and Randall Cobb as well, because this is a good matchup for the passing game.
Right.
Yeah.
The concern I have long-term here is Cooper was dealing with an ankle issue all year, and now he's popped up with this thigh, which we know can be, like, I mean, it can be a couple weeks injury.
Right, right. So, yeah, I mean, keep an eye on that, because, like I said, the Cowboys, to this point, haven't said a ton about how long it's going to keep him out, but it's definitely one to watch. Really awful news. Will Disley, believed to have torn his Achilles. The Seahawks did come from behind to get a win against the Cleveland Browns, but Disley left that game fairly early.
Yep.
I mean, someone tweeted to me last week, Graham, and I agree, that fantasy tight end is a dystopian hellscape right now. And one of the few safe outposts that we seem to have there is now gone to us. Yeah, I know we got Hunter Henry back, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But this is big, man, because Will Disley had turned into a nice play every week.
He did, and you know, he was super involved and close when Seattle Seahawks got into the red zone. We could, you know, rely on him getting consistent red zone targets, and now the Seahawks are going to try and fill that void with Luke Wilson and Jacob Hollister. So
good luck with that.
Double
cannot,
well.
Yeah, we cannot rely on a Seahawks tight end.
We can't have nice things at the tight end position this season. I mean, if you think about it, like, Kittle's had two big games in a row. I mean, Travis Kelce's kind of been...
That was Kelsey's worst game of the year against
Ertz.
The Texans,
yes. I mean, we thought Ertz was going to have a big game. He didn't have hardly. Dallas Goedert was better than him from a fantasy perspective. The tight end position is, I mean, it's brutal this season. Unless you were lucky enough to get a Waller or a Hooper.
I mean, but even though a lot of those guys you sort of fell into, right?
Like, no doubt. The dudes that you drafted to be prominent parts of your starting lineup, a lot of them are not producing.
Waller was a last-round pick.
Yeah.
A waiver wire pickup.
Wisley. I did that last one, too. Disley also was a waiver wire pickup, right? Yeah. I mean, so... Hooper was a late rounder.
On the flip side, George Kittle's put together back-to-back solid games, so maybe starting to wake up a little bit.
Oh, Marcus is so in. I can't wait. When are you going to start breaking out this?
Yeah, see, no, I'm not going to do it because I just know it's going to get my heart broken late in the year, so I'm not.
Well, you guys are going to whip the Redskins. I mean, come on, dude.
See, this
like, you guys are going to beat them up.
They're totally
so you're going to be
game.
Undefeated through seven
this is
weeks.
Totally a trap game.
The Niners are in a great spot, the NFC. I mean, they really are. I mean, right now it's Saints, Niners, and Seahawks.
This game's totally a trap game this week. Absolutely. They go on the road. They beat up on the Rams.
I do appreciate your whole reverse jinx psychology thing going on here.
Yeah, man. I've been through this too many times. All right, there you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right. Wrapping up week six, the first thing I actually wanted to talk about was some quarterbacks, because there were some things happening at the quarterback position this past week. The first one is Sam Darnold was back. And it's not, you know, obviously Darnold came in, he played well, and he's the guy that is sort of a fringe starter, I think, in 12-team leagues a lot of times. But the bigger thing is, Graham, having Sam Darnold back. Obviously, we saw Robbie Anderson come back into our lives, right? Jamison Crowder suddenly. I mean, Le'Veon didn't have a huge game, but you got to believe this helps him too. So now, all those Jets assets that people were just sitting on for weeks, now it's time like you can break them out and actually use them again.
Definitely. I mean, Darnold immediately opened up this passing offense deep downfield. Le'Veon Bell gets his first rushing touchdown right when Darnold returns. No surprise there either. I mean, Darnold on the field obviously is going to increase the opportunities the Jets have to score. And overall, I thought this offense looked really freaking good. I mean, Darnold misses all this time and probably doesn't have the same amount of practice reps that we would normally get for him. And, you know, I get the, you know, couple weeks off probably helps health-wise. But still, I mean, this offense really looked phenomenal yesterday against a good Dallas defense. That the Dallas defense is definitely not one that's, you know, we're not usually expecting big performances against this team.
Yeah, and Darnold is out there on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues. And just to give you a little heads up, the Jets have the sixth easiest schedule among quarterbacks for the rest of the season. And they go through a stretch where he's got Miami, Giants, Redskins, Raiders, Bengals, Dolphins.
Yeah.
It's giddy up.
It's a little precarious. Next week, they play the Patriots on Monday.
And then you got
night,
a roadie at Jacksonville.
And then that's when it really opens up for them.
Yep.
Yeah. That's good news, right? Down to Tennessee. Marcus Mariota got benched, which, by the way, I tweeted this yesterday, too. So between Mariota getting benched, Jameis Winston just completely imploding over in London with six total turnovers, five picks, one fumble. I mean, those two guys are really kind of the last vestiges of the 2015 quarterback draft class that are just hanging on in this league. I mean, I know like Trevor Siemian's still hanging around somewhere as a backup. But that draft class is just completely washing out from the quarterback position.
The correct answer for Mariota versus Winston was just no.
No, neither.
Yeah.
So Mariota gets benched. Ryan Tannehill comes in to take over the quarterback spot. Moves the ball a little bit with the Titans kind of near the end of that game. Now, Vabs, the quarterback spot in Tennessee is sort of up in the air right now. I mean, do we have a preference of which guy makes this offense? I mean, are we just like, let's just hand the keys to Tannehill because it can't be any worse than it was with Mariota or what?
I don't know. I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I guess I'd rather have Mariota in there, but neither one of these guys is going to be fantasy viable. I mean, look at Tennessee's pass catchers since that game against Atlanta. I mean, A.J. Brown's done next to nothing. He had that one touchdown. Corey Davis has disappeared. Delanie Walker has And it stinks because he's a tight end one in a lot of rosters because of the thinness of that position. He's been dreadful for about 3 weeks. And then when, I mean, Derrick Henry goes up against the Broncos and you're thinking this is a good spot for him to put up a big number, and he absolutely bombs in that game. This Titans offense is suddenly, well, a wasteland, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it's just Derrick Henry, I think, every week. Right now, I kind of think Ryan Tannehill is the better player than Marcus Mariota. I don't know if that's...
I just think because, like, Mariota is more versatile, so maybe he can get me some rushing yards. I'm not into Tannehill, man. I'm not into Tannehill.
I mean, who is at this point, right? But, like, Mariota at this point, he just takes so many sacks and is just so limited. And doesn't... I mean, Mariota's basically like a low-rent Alex Smith at this point, and that's like...
A low rent.
I mean, that's not wrong.
That's where we're at.
No,
that's where we're at with him. I mean, it's just... At least Tannehill hasn't had the opportunity to start, and I guess he's like the mystery box.
I think that's probably the bigger point here, right? Is that at this point we've seen all we need to see out of Marcus Mariota.
Exactly, we know what he is,
right? And so, like, I don't know, let's try something else, right? And I think that's sort of the point here. I mean, so I'm like, as somebody who took some late round shots at AJ Brown in a couple of leagues, like, let's see what Tannehill could do. Maybe get him.
Well, I think that's ultimately what's going to happen.
Right. No, I think so too.
I don't know that Tannehill is sort of going to fall behind Mariota, at least for the next week. Why not? I mean, that offense is dreadful right now. So,
well,
make a switch and see if you can get a spark.
And they get to play the same Chargers who couldn't stop Devlin Hodges.
Nope.
So there's that part. The other big quarterback news from the week: Ryan Fitzpatrick ended up coming into the game in what many people were calling the toilet bowl between Miami and Washington.
Yeah.
He took over for Josh Rosen in the fourth quarter, actually moved the Dolphins, got him. Look, they had a 2-point conversion opportunity with a chance to win.
And Kenyon Drake just
clanked it. And that was kind of the end of that. Now, after the game, Brian Flores says that Josh Rosen is still the starter. And from a developmental standpoint, for a team that's not going anywhere, that makes sense. But in terms of trying to, I don't know, keep guys like Preston Williams relevant, keep Devontae Parker going again, I don't know, maybe do we want Fitzmagic?
I'd rather, from a fantasy standpoint, I'd rather have Fitzpatrick.
I agree too, but at this point, I really just don't even know if it matters too much.
No.
Josh Rosen yesterday barely threw the ball past the line of scrimmage. His air yards per pass attempt yesterday was two yards. That was it.
That's not good.
How do you do that?
I mean, he just dumped off to Mark Walton, Kenyon Drake, all these guys.
Speaking of Drake,
it's over, man.
Is it time to just cut him?
It's over.
Yeah,
I mean, four teams off.
Yeah.
Bymageddon, coming around the corner, cut him.
In a 10-team league, I think you could probably cut him.
10-team league, you definitely get rid of him. I mean,
he's basically just a roster clogger.
What happened? I mean, he was a top 20 running back last season, and now...
They're just not that into you.
No.
Yeah. My goodness.
Kenyon Drake is talented. It's just the Dolphins are in full-on evaluation mode. Mark Walton got the majority of the work in that first quarter.
He started the game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of the work in the first quarter. Kalen Ballage was getting the work down near the goal line. He got a couple of goal line kicks.
That's a little end-around.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about just an absolute trash bag, a backfield committee in Miami. Thank you for nothing.
I mean, and here's the thing. I think Drake actually had the most touches. He had 16 touches, had 70 yards. But the fact that, while he was having a fairly decent day, that they still wouldn't just load him up with opportunities says that they're not going to play.
The Dolphins are just, their touchdown expectation every single week is like basically nil.
When a dude is that talented and teams still won't use him in a bigger role, something behind the scenes.
I'm wondering if there's something else about Kenyon Drake that we just don't know about and it's just not working out. But all right, so Fitzmagic, probably not going to see the field except in emergency. He's sort of the, break glass in case of emergency.
One final point here is why is Miami came out and said this past week that we're going to stick with Rosen. He's our starter. And then,
they immediately.
In the middle of the third quarter, you're in a somewhat competitive game. You pull him.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody mentioned on Twitter, it's like,
it's
not exactly as if this tanking thing has been completely well thought out so far. All right. So this is where I somehow lapsed into Bohemian Rhapsody while I was writing this rundown yesterday. Guys that I looked at who had big weeks, we've had maybe a couple of big weeks in a row, and you're wondering, is this the real life? Is this actually going to be what we expect from these guys? Or is this just kind of a smoke screen? The first one is Kyler Murray, who, you know, to this point in the season had sort of been, he'd been okay. He hadn't necessarily been gangbusters, but he certainly hadn't been a disaster. I mean, he's given you 16 points in every single game. But the last 2 weeks, 25 against Cincinnati, 28 against a bad Falcons defense. Next week, he's on the road against the Giants. I mean, Fabs, I know you were, not that you were alone, but you loved Kyler Murray coming into this season. I mean, has he started to turn a corner, or is he still kind of a matchup-based guy?
No, I think he's starting to turn the corner, man. I mean, you look at the numbers that this kid's putting up, 25-plus in two straight games, got the Giants, as you mentioned. Then he's got the Saints. That Saints defense.
That's good now.
I mean, I get it that, like, the numbers look like it's a favorable matchup.
It's not.
It's not. And then he's got the Niners, but then he's got Tampa Bay. He's got Niners in two of three weeks from week 9 to 11. So that's going to be a spot where you're probably going to be looking to fade him. But every week, I just feel like he's getting better and better. And you know, like I said, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is the only quarterback who's basically not a matchup-based option. You're going to play the matchups with just about every quarterback in the league at this point. But I like the confidence.
Yep.
I like that he's looking downfield a little bit more. He's giving you, you know, 34 rushing yards per game. This is why I liked Kyler Murray.
This is, two things here. I think Murray's finally hitting his ceiling. We saw in the first two games, only had three carries in both games, but now they're starting to get him involved in more design plays as a runner, and he's starting to scramble and get outside the pocket more, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And also, Arizona is kicking so much. They get the ball inside
of the
10, 15-yard line a ton. And they just have not been able to convert a lot of those opportunities into touchdowns. And once that starts regressing back towards touchdowns over field goals, and maybe Cliff Kingsbury needs to be a little more aggressive with the play calling, I'm not really sure what it is. But by and large, I mean, Kyler Murray has been a fantastic quarterback for fantasy so far. And over the last 2 weeks, guys, he's only taken one sack. One. I mean, I get it's the Bengals and the Falcons, and they're getting the ball out quick, and those front sevens aren't fantastic. But the added dimension with him as a runner, I think, is really going to help protect him over the long run, because these defenses can't just pin their ears back and just and just blitz.
Well, it's his ability to run, and he knows when to run, too. Like, he's actually kind of smart about it. He doesn't, you know, he will stand in there and try to make throws. He's not going to just take off at the first sign of pressure, but he also, when he decides to run, he's decisive about it, and he will get out. And, you know, I guess being a former baseball player, he knows how to slide.
Yep.
Good for you. Mm-hmm. Stephon Diggs. Who had, look, you could have expected he would have a decent game against the Eagles secondary. I don't think anybody expected the blow-up game with, like $160 and three touchdowns, whatever it was.
Could have had another one.
Probably could have.
Yeah.
It's weird because he had the huge game, especially in the first half. He did a whole lot of damage in the first half. Then he started randomly dropping passes in the second half. It was almost like his hands got tired or something. I don't know.
He didn't live up to that commercial from last season.
No, he did not, with everything sticking to
his
hands.
But he's 167 and three touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, so one, Graham, is this the time to sort of maybe try to trade him away? Or is this like, has the complaints of the wide receivers fallen upon, you know, willing ears in Kirk Cousins, and they're actually going to start throwing him the ball now?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think Stephon Diggs is probably, I think pretty much everyone who has had them in their your leagues this year, you're going to try to trade Diggs away this week. But I do think at the same time, the Vikings now know that they cannot go into every game and just try to pound the rock 40 times per game. Like, they're going to have to unleash Kirk Cousins a little bit downfield. And they've had two great matchups to do that, right, against the Giants and Eagles. And it honestly continues here. The Lions secondary, I know Darius Slay is a very good corner, but they get the Lions, Redskins, and Chiefs over the next 3 weeks. So, I mean, I think we probably saw Diggs' best game of the year, his biggest ceiling. But, you know, the matchups for the next couple of weeks are definitely pretty ripe, too.
Yeah, you know, I know that a lot of folks, it's funny because, you know, I do my normal Monday moaning on Twitter, and
I'm sure Diggs was,
to no one's surprise, yeah. I get a lot of, I bench Stephon Diggs this week, which, look, I get it.
The matchup was right, though.
The matchup was right, you know, people get scared, especially after somebody lets you down a lot.
That's the thing, though, is in most leagues, in like 10 or 12 team leagues, you probably only have three spots to start Diggs in, two receiver spots and a flex, mm-hmm. and you most likely had three better receiver plays over him.
Potentially, right. Potentially. Yeah, again, 167 and three touchdowns, you're not prepared for that.
Dude.
Right.
At all. Yep. Devontae Freeman has sort of come back into our lives. I did a quick check last night. He is on pace, to set a career high in receptions. Right now, he's on pace for 79 catches, which would be the most he's ever had in a season. And Fabs, I think, like, you know, he was a guy who was maybe a late second, early third round pick in a lot of leagues. We expected him to do more as a runner. That hasn't really happened. But maybe this is a blessing in disguise because they're actually using him as a pass catcher. So with most leagues being PPR leagues, this actually ends up maybe being a better deal for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his rushing totals. He hasn't had more than 88 yards in a game. And in four games, he had 30 or fewer. So he's making up for that lack of success on the ground. And part of it has to do with the fact that Atlanta's offensive line has got question marks. They've been playing from behind. And Matt Ryan is on pace to throw the football over 700 times. So being a great pass catcher, as we know Devonta Freeman has been in his career, has done nothing but and help his value in an otherwise bad situation for a running back. So, I mean, you're looking at 18 plus points in three straight games and a guy who now has gone from, do I play him, to, okay, I'm on board in PPR leagues. He's an RB2.
Yeah, I think if anybody has benefited most from Matt Ryan's nearly, you know, like you mentioned, 700 pass attempt pace, it's Austin Hooper and Devonta Freeman. Mm-hmm. I mean, Freeman, we've talked about it a few weeks, like Falcons haven't been able to run the ball because they've just been trailing so much and they get behind so quickly they can't really do too much but throw to catch up. But Freeman, I think, has looked like the same player, and they've gotten super involved in the passing game. And this past week, he really opened up the gap between him and Ito Smith in terms of their snap share, their touches. He's pretty clearly their lead guy now.
Quick update. This coming from Ralph Vacchiano in New York, that Saquon Barkley has a chance to play this week.
I would think so, yeah.
Barkley and Evan Ingram have a chance to play this week for the Giants. Sterling Shepard's still a long shot to play.
Well, we'll know if Evan's going to play because I'll look at his lineup.
Right, exactly. The whole tweet, Saquon Barkley, Wayne Gallman, Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard all took part in individual drills during the Giants' light practice today. Shepard a long shot to play Sunday. Barkley and Ingram have a chance to play. So, look. One that will definitely help Daniel Jones, but all these guys that you know you had to kind of make contingency plans for last week.
They're playing the Cardinals. Evan Ingram could go for 150.
This could be another potential high scoring game there in that one. Last guy that reemerged back into our lives, and I'm hoping that this is actually real life. Hunter Henry, 100 yards, a pair of touchdowns in his first game back after sitting out with a fractured kneecap. I mean, obviously 102 touchdowns, you're not going to expect that every single week, but Graham, and we've talked ad nauseum about the tight end position. So like, please, 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 can this actually be a real thing with Hunter Henry?
Oh God. Yes. I mean, we need it. We need it at this point, especially losing Disley. Hunter Henry has been, every single time we've seen Hunter Henry play a near full-time role, he has been fantastic. And right now, I think this is an opportune time to go trade for Hunter Henry in your fantasy leagues if you can. I know tight end is extremely expensive.
Graham?
No.
We need to have a conversation.
We do need to talk. But no, I mean, how awesome is it? I mean, he misses basically 5 weeks, comes right back, doesn't play a full-time role just yet, but mm-mm. I mean, gets just a ton of targets and is basically their main, you know, their main focal point on offense.
Yeah. Mike Williams, I think, led the charge with 9 targets. Henry had 8, you know.
He came at the right time, that's for sure, because the position needs some help.
Hunter Henry, when he's played over the last couple of years, he has been like a top 5 tight end in all of the efficiency metrics, yards per route run, catch rate, average depth of target. I mean, they target him so far downfield for a tight end relatively. He is just a ton of upside.
And you know, part of the reason I loved him this year was like this was also his first year without Antonio Gates there. Yeah. You know, like this was his job. And then he got hurt, so hopefully now he's back.
I mean, everybody in the industry loved Hunter Henry. Yeah. It's all a matter of him staying out of the trainer's room.
Staying on the field. Yep. So, all right, so those guys, so that was Is This the Real Life? Now, of course, the next line is This Just Fantasy? This is where I'm mostly like trying to hope that the things get better for these guys on this list here, because things have not been great recently. And the first one, I mean, we're staying on that Charger theme. This will be Charger heavy here. Let's just say that. Keenan Allen, who, I told somebody last week that, you know, hey, you know, I know Keenan Allen, it wasn't great. He gave you 18 yards. You know, just hang with him, right? Because it can't get any worse than that, which I was right. He had 33 yards. Oh, so it was not worse. It was better. Not great, but better. But so now the last three games, 48 yards against the Dolphins, 18 yards against the Broncos, 33 yards against the Steelers. And this is after a guy who balled out the first 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't, Fabs, I don't have an explanation for why this is happening. And I don't know, like, this is the guy you're going to keep putting him in your lineup because the ceiling is so high. But, man, it's baffling right now.
This one was a kick in the pills because the Steelers had been awful against slot receivers. And, you know, we joked about last year how they tried to cover him with linebackers. And this one hurt because the matchup was so ripe for him to put up a big line. You know, Phillip Rivers targeted Allen, you know, behind Mike Williams and Hunter Henry in this contest. And this was a game where Keenan Allen should have put up a good line. He didn't. As you mentioned, this is three games in a row where he has put up stinkers. You've got Tennessee up next. Their defense is pretty tough. But, I mean, I think for me, this is one of those scenarios where I try and buy low on him.
Yeah.
Because this is the floor here, and he's going to get up off that floor sooner rather than later.
So this week we can maybe write off just as a bad game. Haven't had a chance to go back and rewatch, see what the Steelers did coverage-wise. But week five against the Broncos, got Chris Harris, great player. And then week four, they played the Dolphins, and I mean, basically they just got out ahead real quick, and they didn't have to throw a ton in the second half to keep Keenan Allen's floor alive. He still had five catches, 48 yards, didn't absolutely kill you that week. But yeah, the last 2 weeks have just been brutal. 5, 6, and 6 targets after seeing double digit in every single game before that.
So the schedule looking forward now, though, Fabs mentioned that the Titans, they're on the road at Tennessee next week.
Yep.
Then they're on the road against the Bears. Then they've got the Packers, which, by side note, that's their next home game. And you thought the Steelers fans took over down there in Carson.
Wait till the Cheeseheads get there.
Packer fans are just as faithful and travel just as well. So there could be a whole lot of green and gold.
He does have the ninth toughest schedule among wide receivers, or the Chargers do as a team.
Right. So again, like, this is a guy that just because the ceiling is so high, you're probably going to put him in your lineup, but it has been a drought, and hopefully things get better. Speaking of droughts, his teammate Melvin Gordon, who sat out, was holding out for the first part of the season. This was his second week back. And I don't know, week two wasn't a whole lot better than week one for Melvin Gordon coming back in here. I mean, Graham, I watched them, and they're obviously trying to force feed him to get him going. And one, it's not really working, because certainly, you know, they've had their injuries along the offensive line. That's been bad. But then on top of it, when you fall behind like they did last night, it gets even harder to try to run the football. And in the meantime, it's sort of messing up Austin Eckler's production as well. I mean, I don't know what the Chargers do. I mean, do we expect better things out of Melvin Gordon?
Well, last night we saw Melvin Gordon play 60% of the snaps. That was up from 45-48% the week before. And I think this is what we should come to expect out of this Chargers backfield, is some sort of 55-60-40 split between these two guys. And when that happens, I mean, you're going to have games like this where Mel Gordon takes the lead in terms of carries, but, you know, Eckler was still heavily involved in passing down, saw 4 targets. And right now, I just think games where the Chargers struggle or get behind, Melvin Gordon is his floor now. I mean, we are accustomed to him getting 15 to 16 opportunities every week, and he just does not have that same floor in years past because, honestly, Austin Eckler has deserved to take on a bigger role.
I mean, absolutely, he has with what he's done. It's been outstanding, and now suddenly, both guys seem a little bit kind of contained with the way this situation is, and so maybe things will get better. But again, we just kind of ran off the defenses they have to face in the next few weeks. So we'll see what happens there. All right, let's just get this juju thing out of the way. let's just get it out of the way here, right? Look, the first 3 weeks honestly weren't terrible for Juju,
no,
right?
He's putting up decent numbers.
6 for 78, 5 for 84, 3 for 81 and a touchdown. Since then, 3 for 15. He did have the 7 for 75 and a touchdown, although like one of them was sort of like a, you know, close your eyes and throw it, and then he kind of turned it into a big play sort of thing. And then this week, 1 catch, 7 yards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Fabs, I want to believe some of it has to do with the fact that they are starting a third-string quarterback, and that after the bye, hopefully Mason Rudolph is back and things get better. but it has been an absolute struggle the last, you know, even that game against Baltimore. I mean, it wasn't pretty. He sort of got his, but it was a slog. That's kind of what it's been for Juju. I mean, is it as simple as saying Mason Rudolph sort of helps solve this problem?
Mason Rudolph's not helping to solve.
All right.
I mean, is it better than having the third stringer in there, Devlin Hodges? I mean, of course. But everything that could go wrong for Juju so far this season has gone wrong around him.
Right.
Right? You lose Roethlisberger for the season. They had a great rapport, and he was going to be Big Ben's number one target. And then the Steelers went out and added Dante Moncrief, hoping that he could come in and make an impact. They don't have a number two wide receiver. They don't have a reliable number two option right now. No. Vance McDonald has disappeared. Deontay, I mean, there's nothing there. So defenses now even more so can focus on stopping Smith-Schuster. And the Devlin Hodges situation makes it to basically what I had mentioned a little bit earlier. James Conner saw a ton. He had seven targets in that game because a little bit of really. This, right? Just a little bit of dump pass. That's all he did. Everything was short stuff. And Juju is a guy who can take the top off of defense, get the ball in space, make a play. Hasn't happened for him.
The biggest thing right now is the Steelers were the most pass-heavy team in the league last year. And
right.
Big Ben was just throwing so much.
Yeah.
This season, they can't do that because, one, obviously Big Ben's gone. But now they've got Rudolph and Devlin Hodges, who all they can do is check down.
Right.
All they're doing is checking down to James Conner. We saw their game plan a couple weeks ago too, with the James Conner Jalen Samuels duo in the backfield. They obviously can't do that anymore. But yeah, it's just a combination of the Steelers not being able to throw the ball as much as they did last year, and then also, I mean, the quarterback connection is just significantly worse.
Yeah, I mean, you can't throw in. I mean, even Rudolph as well, but you can't throw a guy like Hodges in there and expect him to have some kind of rapport with even the number one wide receiver. It's just not going to happen. And you know, we've seen some success with like a guy like Gardner Minshew, Kyle Allen. But you know, Devlin Hodges is a different. He's a different situation.
Dude, Juju has not seen 10 targets in a game yet this year.
Not yet. And I don't expect it to happen really anytime soon at this point, though.
In fact, right now, and I'm trying to go through and see if I can look this up. But the targets are way down, and my guess, Graham, is that the quality of the targets are also.
Oh. I would
going to be
definitely suspect
significantly down. I don't have that information in front of me, but it's pretty obvious to suggest that that is the case with Juju. And I mean, if we had the knowledge of what was going to happen in Pittsburgh back before it was time to do drafts,
well, I wouldn't have taken Juju in the, you know,
yes. Juju Smith-Schuster would not have been a second or third round pick. He just wouldn't have.
Yeah. So, there you go. So we'll shift from Juju to his old college teammate, Robert Woods, who, as I mentioned earlier, did score the first rushing touchdown that anyone's had against the 49er defense this year. By the way, side note, and I just had this. We were talking about how good the 49er defense has been this year, and of course now I closed it, but Field Yates just had a really interesting tweet about how the Niners have really shut down some top receivers. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Odell Beckham Jr., Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and Brandon Cooks combined against the 49ers this season. 14 catches, 143 yards, and one touchdown.
So you're telling me to sit Terry McLaurin next
week. So, good luck with that. But Robert Woods, aside from, you know, scoring that rushing touchdown yesterday, that was it. He had four targets, no catches. He just had the two carries for 16 yards and a touchdown. And it has been, you know, it has been up and down with him, Graham. I mean, he had a good week one, next 2 and 3, not so much. Huge week four against the Buccaneers. And then since then, he's sort of back down again. I always figured coming into the season that Cooper Kupp was going to take a lot off Robert Woods' plate this year. He really is, as Fabs mentioned, I guess he's truly back to being a matchup-based starter now at this point, right?
Yeah, Robert Woods, he's just ping-ponged all over the place. He had a fine start of the season with 8-70, but then two bad games, and you mentioned the huge blow-up game against the Bucs. Obviously, he was the biggest casualty of this Jared Goff disaster game. I mean, Goff was under pressure on like 40% of his dropbacks this past week. That was pretty easily among the highest rates in the league this past week. And yeah, I mean, the Rams, just once they get knocked off their script and Goff gets knocked off their script, he can't make plays. you know, these second reaction plays, and it kills these receivers because, you know, obviously they're it's pretty easy to get free when you're facing coverage for 5 to 6 seconds. But if Goff can't make those plays to get outside the pocket and extend plays, it doesn't even really matter. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is the Rams offense now. You know, it's just a significantly lower floor than we've seen in years past.
So what Graham is saying that despite the uniform, we drafted the Bills Robert Woods this season rather
don't
than the Rams.
Don't put that on him. Don't put
Robert
that on him.
This season.
Don't put that on him.
Yet. No, listen, man, it's not on him, but it's maybe not comparable, but it just reminds me of like the whole, you know, Eric Mangini when everyone was calling him Manginius when he comes in and suddenly, you know, he leads the team and then the next season it's like, and McVay is,
I mean,
against the guy. He's an offensive genius. He got the Rams to the Super Bowl last season, but
here's the thing. This
is one of those scenarios where it's pretty, it's pretty obvious. One season to the next,
yeah,
things change.
It's also, you know, your move, Sean, right? Like he came out and he sort of changed things and he forced defenses to kind of readjust what they were doing. Now they have sort of adjusted. Now, it also probably doesn't help that the Rams' offensive line is not the same as it was, that Todd Gurley is not quite the same player. But teams have figured out how to do stuff against this Rams. So now, Sean, your move, right? Like, what do you do in response to that? How do you scheme with the pieces you have in place to make this offense,
One of the biggest things, too, is Jared Goff coming, you know, McVay's talking to him the whole time he's going to the line of scrimmage. Right. And then that communication gets cut off, and the defense can adjust in the final 10, 15 seconds. Right. And Goff has not had the answers.
Yeah. Well, and that was a thing, you know, talking to Willie McGinnis last year, kind of late in the season, and he mentioned that was sort of a thing defenses were starting to do, is that they would just basically disguise what they were doing until that final 15 seconds. Then they kind of show their cards, and they force Jared Goff to, you know, make a decision, see what you can do, and the results have not been great.
Nope.
So
they haven't been.
All right, so that's enough of that. That's enough sadness there. Waiver Wire, which does not have a Bohemian Rhapsody theme to it. Sorry. some guys out there on the waiver wire who may or may not be available in your leagues. It is certainly worth checking out. The first one is Hunter Henry. Obviously, after the big game and knowing how we all desperately need tight ends, I'm hearing from a lot of you who lost Will Dissly over the weekend, so I'm sure there will be a rush to at least look, right? I mean, he may not be available in your league, but it's at least worth a check to see if he's out there to put in a claim for Hunter Henry this week. A couple of Jets out there, Jamison Crowder, Robbie Anderson, who we mentioned, who are back in our lives now that Sam Darnold's spleen is, apparently it's supercharged. Apparently mono, maybe that's his superhero origin story, right? Like he had mono and now he's going to be like a league MVP.
Sam Darnold's nervous system got supercharged.
It just got supercharged by having mono. Apparently he's great now. So that helps Jamison Crowder and Robbie Anderson. Crowder out there in a ton of leagues. Anderson, maybe not so much, but again, it is worth a check to see if he's available in your league. Speaking of tight ends, Ricky Seals-Jones, I know it hasn't been great, but he has, he's got a couple of touchdowns this year. And, he seems to be one of the few people that Baker Mayfield can connect with on a semi-regular basis. That's probably a deeper league play, as is Mark Walton, who is a very deep league play as we get into the bye weeks. And maybe you're hurting for running backs because the Steelers are off, the Browns are off. I believe the Panthers are off.
Buccaneers.
So yeah. You're at least you're losing some big running backs, though, in those four teams there. So you may need some help there. So in deeper leagues, Mark Walton is, I guess, the starter.
Yeah, I got a few more to throw out.
Please,
Darnold. I mean, he's a must add, especially with what that schedule looks like. Alexander Mattison needs to be owned in all leagues. Curtis Samuel might be floating around there in some leagues on NFL.com. I think he's owned in fewer than 70%. Auden Tate, Chase Edmonds. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you are trying to get your handcuffs now for your studs. I've talked about Josh Allen, dude. His schedule is just a cakewalk for the next 5 weeks. Cole Beasley could be out there. And another thing too, and I mention this every single season, but you guys probably know this. On NFL.com, if a team is on a bye, you can pick up those players even after the games have been played, as long as the player you drop was not in your starting lineup. So like last night, I picked up the Bills defense and dropped a player that was on my bench. You can go out and do that. And the Bills are a great play this week against Miami. I mean, same thing like Josh Allen. If you had a player that's kind of like on your bench, and maybe they had a bye last week or you didn't start them, you can go out, make the move now, beat the competition to the punch.
Yeah, this is another really bad week for waiver wire. Actually, you mentioned Josh Allen. I actually think he's probably the top pickup this week.
Yeah, he is.
He's probably done a bunch of leagues after through the bye week, and I think you've talked about how easy their schedule
is
coming up.
Dude, it is an absolute
cakewalk. They have a bunch of games at home, too.
Cakewalk.
Yeah.
I mean, and Josh Allen, like I've said it on the show before, that I feel like he's the new Cam Newton, and I really feel like he is a guy who can help lead a lot of fantasy owners to a playoff berth.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got Miami,
three straight at home.
Philly, Washington, all in Buffalo. Then you got at Cleveland and then at Miami again. And then it gets tough. They got Denver in week 12. So then you get into a scenario where the playoff schedule for fantasy is not great, but Allen can help get you there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the bigger thing right now. Like, just let him get you there, and then you can figure out what
he will put up the points for you.
Figure out what you're going to do after that happens.
Yep.
So there you go. That is it. We are done. We appreciate you downloading and listening, as always. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, according to chemistry, alcohol is a solution. We'll see you on Wednesday.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.